Oh, now I am.
Yes,
I'm on here anyway. Okay. There's a part here at the end where it says that it appears that one particle of an entangled pair knows, and the word knows is in quotation mark, what measurement has been performed by the other, even though there is no known means, nothing obvious that's going to tell us that that information was communicated between the particles. Mm-hmm. I love that when I read that. And it also made me a lot more comfortable because I'm absolutely not scientific. Absolutely.
No hard science here.
No hard science. I will admit to one thing, though. I've developed over the years a penchant for, I'm actually a writer, so my talks are very often titled with a pull, something that will bring the congregation in on that Sunday. So that when I got to deciding that what I was going to talk about was quantum entanglement, it was more about that I had come across something in a magazine that talked about it, and what it was referring to was one atom actually moving in tandem from one location to another and joining forces with what they were calling its sparticle. All right? It was a sister particle. They found that one atom just joined for no explained reason, no apparent reason, will join its forces with its sister particle. And here's the part, maybe with a little bit that Frank told you, will make sense to you. This is what called my attention to it. This process is understood and spoken of in the Kabbalah as the soul connection. Right? It's an interconnectedness that's actually moving beyond the physical into our unseen reality. That's what made it so important to me, because I'm going to agree with what Reverend Frank said. As long as I can remember, I've been more interested in my unseen reality. I've had more faith in my unsealed. And we drove in from Waynesville. It was absolutely beautiful. We remarked without fail every time we come through these mountains how held, how supported we feel by them, how powerful the energy, the strength. And the only thing I can actually akin that feeling to is the feeling that I have when I think about the isness that is me. I learned a long time ago that this that appears to be me is the furthest thing from what I truly am. And I certainly can't trust it. My hair has turned color or lost color, right? Things have spread, things have dropped, things have, you know. There's nothing to trust here. It's a vehicle. And yet the part of me, the isness that is me, continues to grow and to expand. You talk with my students, and they'll tell you, still doesn't let us say change. I don't like that word. We are perfect from the moment that we were considered complete by our source. We can grow, but please never think of yourself as having to change. I just won't allow anybody to think that way. It's to belittle themselves, and to belittle yourself is to belittle that which source created and source itself. That's the thing that's the most important to me. That's the thing that keeps me going. And that is the inner thing that makes me feel supported and warm. And it's a tangible feeling, very much like we feel when we ride through those mountain passes or walk through the hills. Okay. Now, this kind of quantum entanglement that I came across as I was reading it, well, what it actually meant to me was this peacefulness and recognizing that someone else knew, someone else was of importance that could reach people, was explaining how it is that what appears to be these million random events, at the movement of these atoms, that they are moving in synchronicity. You can't, and it's not something that anyone else is going to be able to explain. Did anyone ever read, or was it Dancing with the Woolly Masters about 25, 30 years ago? That book, and it's only like that, took forever for me to get through. Because every so often I'd read and I'd look and I'd read and then it would come, oh, okay, I got it, I've got it. And I would sit, I'd close my book and I'd meditate. And the recognition of what was being told to me was so powerful. And it would become me, I would embody it. And I'd pick the book up again and I'd read the next sentence. It's just, what? I could not make it out from moment to moment. It was almost impossible for me to hold on to it. And I realized years later, it's not meant for me to hold on to it. Quantum mechanics is not a specific science. And it's not specific because it depends on how, who you are when you're looking at it, where you're coming from. You're the one that makes the decision about what it is that you're seeing. And I recognize that my life here had a certain meaning to it that I didn't know for the longest time when I struggled with my difference, why I was so different from everyone else. And it was because I believe that I'm here to speak the truth that other people are afraid is only theirs, and yet it's all of our truth. It's that truth that we lose faith, that we lose trust, that we go from feeling high and understanding and embodying to just not connecting. And there's such a sadness, there's such an emptiness when we feel we're not connecting. And I don't know anyone who in truth wouldn't admit that that's part of their life, that's part of the high, and part of the low of being a seeker. Our congregation in Waynesville is, I love to say, is made up of, and has been over all these years, of different people, different versions of humanity that walk through the doors, people who identify themselves as part of the human species. And as you get to know them, you find out that this one is a Jew, and this one is what they like to call Reformed Catholics or Recovering Catholics. I was brought up a Catholic. And I want to say that nothing made me as powerful in my faith, which I'd questioned for many years, as the ordination as a spiritual religious science minister. Because finally I understood what they weren't saying, what they didn't know how to say. I'm not a recovering anything. I am a person who stands proud and says, it doesn't always appear to work, but it's me. It's lost the connection. It's still there, like the electricity with the lights off. Right? Did you? I'm sure most of us have heard the story because it's a wonderful metaphysical story about the Indians as Cortez came in with his ships, these grand ships in the horizon, and he came ashore in his little tiny ships, and he realized that they weren't even seeing them. They couldn't see the ships. They didn't see the ships. They greeted him as a god because he had a beard, but anyway. They didn't see where he came from because they'd not been prepared. They had no background. They just did not know what they were looking at.
A mental equivalent,
that's one of Ernest Holmes' famous words and famous for Reverend Sill for forgetting it. He knows to jump in all the time. Mental equivalent. These people had no mental equivalent, so they couldn't see it. Electricity has always been here without a mental equivalent. We didn't even know to look for it. Our creative source is always here. Always here. We are the ones that lose the connection with it. At the moment, at the center, we have a beautiful couple that's just joined us. They are the second that we've had a number of years that comes from the Baha'i faith. And we make a point of being able to pull everyone into our teachings and our understanding. Diversity makes, it's of no value if you don't use it, if you don't recognize it and embrace it and become part of it. So after Laylee and her husband Brad joined up with us, I remembered I had read something years back when I was preparing a talk that was actually titled, Who Are Our Teachers? Because I think one of the most important things is for us to recognize that we don't have one teacher anywhere. We have to look for the teacher. We have to see what we resonate with inside. What goes over us, goes around us is fine, but it's what comes to us and we resonate with. And I knew I had something on the computer, so I pulled it out. This is a passage from the Baha'i faith that is so pure in its acceptance and in its understanding of absolute truth. And it's an awareness that no matter how many other philosophies and religions I've studied, I think I find only in the Baha'i faith. They are told, every time a manifestation of God appears, a fuller measure of inspiration for the next stage in the awakening and progress of humanity is released into the world. A human being, ordinary in every outward respect, is called on to be the mouthpiece for God. One may call to mind Moses standing before the burning bush, the Buddha receiving enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, the Holy Spirit descending upon Jesus in the form of a dove, or the Archangel Gabriel appearing to Mohammed. The students of Edgar Cayce will remember that Cayce has told us that it was one entity that moved from human experience to human experience. The understanding of our wholeness and our oneness is way too elusive for me to hang my hat on that. I believe that that entity that came to us as a teacher, whether as Muhammad or whoever he was known as at that time, was part of this wholeness that had taken the time to allow itself to recognize, to remember, to know. I think that what drew me to that expression, quantum entanglement, was that understanding that held me when I read the words, that it's just not realistic for us as citizens of this universe to keep ignoring the profound similarities of our combined faith, ignoring, and worse, we know that, and worse than ignoring. And I stand here today, as I have at the C2C often, asking, reminding us that the time is so far past for us to open to exploring those impeccable likenesses of our spiritual philosophies. It needs to be done, and it needs to be done now. We have to stop seeing differences which don't exist any more than the border between this country and the next country. I was in Arizona with my daughter a few years ago, and she took me to a high plateau, and she said, Mama, look down there, do you see it? And I said, what? She's the line. Do you see the line? I said, baby, I don't see it. Oh, of course you see the line, Mama. That's Mexico on the other side of it. You don't see the line? I really, really love my kids because they get it. I wasn't always sure. But they do. They get it. And this teaching of quantum entanglement, I looked at it as a natural progression. And this teaching of Baha'u'llah, the Baha'i teaching, this teaching of this fuller progression, when they say a fuller measure of inspiration for the next stage in the awakening and progress of humanity being released into the world, this respectfully, lovingly, and with faith and trust, directs every one of us to recognize that logical and that global connection of one spiritual maker to its creation. This tells us that the student is now ready And the teachers have appeared. They continue to appear, but it's time for us to be the teachers. We've been on a journey for a long time, but we are truly being called on now to make notes and to take action and to be responsible. One of my favorite teachers, Reverend Frank, always used to say to me, I want to sound just like him. I want to be like him. I want the smoothness that he has. I'd say he's reading off a teleprompter. You know, and if you listen to the man, he's saying the same thing word for word that you can go along with the script by holding up his book. Let it be. He was going to grow up and he was going to be like Wayne Dyer. Right? And Wayne Dyer told us once, we can't learn anything through the efforts of others. The world's greatest teachers can teach us absolutely nothing unless we are willing to apply what they have to offer based on your knowing. We can only grow based on your knowing. Based on everything that I have accumulated in my being up to this moment. The things I've listened to, the things I've heard, the things that I've dismissed. Now I can work from that. I can work from this ever-available personal understanding of a perfect universe. And I can apply it within my own life experiences. And the beauty of the diversity is that mine is going to be slightly different from yours and yours. And together we're going to make this one thing if we listen. Fred talked about my growing up. And yeah, I'm going to agree, because as a little girl, and we all did this, every single one of us, what we did, we came from families that taught us what we thought we were. How long did it take us to recognize that I don't agree with this, I don't resonate with this, I was taught this. And for a long time, we believed we were that, and in my case, and I'm not alone, we thought there was something wrong. Because we weren't truly resonating what we were told that we believed. The thing is that turns out that I am not what I was taught. No one in this room is what they were taught. We are a combination of the experience of being taught and the outcome. How that worked for me, how that worked for you. This is getting closer to the truth of who we are. Rarely can we say I am like my mother, my grandmother, other than a piece here and a piece there. I look at my four children and every so often I recognize, oh yes, they are all related. They're all mine. And when I have that feeling, I react with surprise. I am surprised. This teaching of truth, which is what we need to do, that we need to spread it, we need to teach it. It's about the outcome, the difference between knowing about something and knowing something inside here, feeling it, and it's undeniable. This is what we teach with our actions. The Buddha tells us, do not believe what you've heard. Do not believe in tradition simply because it's been handed down for many generations. He even says, don't believe in anything because it's been repeated or because it was written by an old sage. Be skeptical. Be skeptical of conjecture, authority, teachers, and elders. Now, he continues, if after careful observation and analysis, it agrees with reason, and this is the most important part, and will benefit all, right? Will benefit all, then accept it by all means. Live it. Be it. But first, make your own perceptions about it, how this is going to work. Make it work through you, as you, before you take it out there. Thing about is, what I'm asking everyone to do is to discard most of what they've heard on the outside and move instead to the intuition inside of us. Now, intuition is described as perception beyond the physical senses. I'm going to tell you, that's a great place to live. It is. It's a sensory system that operates without data from the five senses, right? It is a voice that whispers to us from the soul. And it cannot be wrong. I've come to the conclusion over the years, because I am a student, I have notes stashed everywhere. I get up in the middle of the night and write things down. I study, I highlight, I make arrows. I look for books that have pages in the back where I can scribble. So I'm a student, and I'll always be a student. But everything that I teach has been tweaked by the reflections and the thoughts of this I am-ness that is named Sill, Irving Sill. Everything that comes out through here, it's part of that which I put together. It's important that we all honor the direction of our own beingness, that we recognize that we're not accidents. We were deliberately created, every one of us. We need to remember to honor and listen to those subtle insights, the tools of our choice making. Our evolution will be arrived at as we watch and we observe and we think. It's brought to us through riots, through war. Comes to us through those aha moments. You know? Comes to us through our anger and our mistakes. And the expressions of compassion that we've shown towards others. This is what creates our intuition. Inner responses from the soul. These are our keys. I've actually come to the point where I recognize that for me, I can't ignore the voices. I can't ignore the understanding. I believe that ignoring all of these things creates emotional waste within our body, and it's damaging, creates illness. We begin to believe those things instead of recognizing the simplicity of turning ourselves over to the will of God. That song was so perfect and so beautiful. As a child, I hated the words in the Our Father that said, "My will be, your will be done." I just said, what about me? It's my will I want to do. Mine. And one day as an adult, I thought about it. I said, well, I'll be damned. It's the same will. It's the one that works. Yes, thy will be done. That's our prayer. It's our intention. And I recognize that I've had to come about a way of policing myself, not just waking up every day and passing through the day. There's something that I actually call spiritual self-medicating. A lot of talk about self-medicating going on. It can be a good thing. Spiritual self-medicating. It involves a cleansing nutritional program. You know, there was a time in my life when I didn't believe in supplements, vitamins, damaged by GMO, any of those things. I didn't believe it. I had such an amazing trust that I could eat anything and simply bless it first. as the years went on, I got more involved with things, that attitude changed, and I started to be a little bit more aware. I look back on it now, and I say, okay, those were teachings. Which one is really me? Because, you know, you can't do a little bit of both. It's one or the other. You either are spirit and physical, or you're physical and physical. We just all choose. But always remember that we are spiritual beings first. We're physical beings second. One of the other steps, and this is probably one of the most important steps, we need to learn to honor that guidance that we receive, to be willing to. And this is the reason it's so important to practice it. There is something about intuitive hearing, because intuitive hearing can be so clear that it's real easy to deny that we've heard anything. It's really easy to say, I just made that up. I didn't get it right. Who am I kidding? Where did I get that from? A committed teacher, student, does not listen. And the most important facet of spiritual self-medicating is to develop and follow an openness towards life and towards our universe, an openness to it. When we drive through these mountains, when we see those amazing puffs of smoke that we see only here and there, there's a draw to become one with it. And then we think, well, how silly is that? Let me concentrate on my driving. Nothing silly. Be part of everything. Recognize, respect, and love everything. Be aware of everything. We need to recognize in the truth of us is that there's a reason for everything we perceive is happening. You know, in the metaphysical world, there's a very powerful thought that tells us that life is an illusion. None of this is really happening. Well, we think it is, don't we? We feel like it is. So that's the only thing we can give credibility to, our perception of it. That's the only thing we have any control over. What we don't think about is that spontaneous perception, which is what I'm talking about, is a very, very necessary and powerful tool for human development, for humanity at its highest. This is quantum entanglement. This is what it is. One atom moving in complete tandem with the other. This is a human equivalent of inspiration that prompts us to follow through, into that higher step of evolution. Spiritual intuition should never remain silent. It's actually the birthing ground of clarity and vision. Spiritual wisdom actually is the only thing that's going to offer us the possibility of knowing that we are living in truth. It's the only thing that's going to help us with this awakening that we're all waiting to be part of. And we are part of it. Make no mistake about it. It's not down the road. It's here. It's now. We've been told this. And we know this. In our hearts, we know this. Look around. There's no more sitting around. Ernest Holmes, our founder and our leader, the man I respect so much, he tells us that the greatest teacher who ever lived was the most spiritual man because the more universal and comprehensive the thought, the more godlike it must become. He was one of those who talked to us all the time about tomorrow's brave new world. Ernest Holmes, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Whitman, all of these initial New Thought people that broke ground for us to be able to be here together. They had an understanding, and they came around during one of the really, really difficult times for this country. After the war, after two wars really, during the Depression, these words were written at a time when people had lost hope. But Ernest Holmes knew better. So if we ever get this feeling like that's not going to work today, no one has any idea what's going on. We have stopped throwing Christians into the lion's den for entertainment, right? We have evolved. We're just not there yet. And it's up to every one of us to be the ones that are there. Right? When Ernest Holmes talked about the fact that we were coming into ourselves, that we were going to be discovering our true selves, a self that was going to be undeterred by condition, unlimited by circumstances. He was talking about his tomorrow. And today is his tomorrow. It's up to us now. I think that once every one of us is comfortable allowing, and this is the clue, allowing that we exist as part of the divine, that we are not accidents. Whatever the divine is to you, we're going to recognize our true unity with this amazing, wonderful universe. A universe that is made up not only of the blue and green, of the soft grays of the clouds, but the people and their thoughts and their beliefs and their philosophies. Delve into any of it and you're going to see truth about yourself. Some years ago we had done a cross-country trip and we spent some time at Mesa Verde, and I climbed down as far as I could with the help of a native guide who touched my heart more than anything else with his acceptance of me as an outsider. He could see the trust I had, how I was touched by the energy of this grand, lasting tribute to a people. Climbing back up was more difficult, and he helped me climb up, and at one point, he asked me if I could see, and I knew what he was talking about. And he held me close and he said, "You can see." And then he spoke something to me in his own language, which I didn't understand by words, but I understood by feeling. I felt accepted and loved. The energy that we were feeling there was life. The living, there was still, there remained a tribute to these people, to the strength and the power of these people that lived in these cave dwellings, that fashioned out homes and kivas and places of worship and farming communities out of the earth. How much more part of the earth? A week and a half later, we were coming in off of 40 and driving down 256. And as the car moved along on our last step home, something caught my eye and I looked behind me and a coyote had crossed behind us on the road. Anyone who knows anything about the Hopi legend understands that the Spider Woman laid down the beginnings of the five races and told them to go, move, become one with the earth. And as these tribes became and their own, the red and the yellow, and there was a mark believed to be the blessing as they left one part of the country and moved on to the next, and that would be the crossing of a coyote behind them, marking the success of where they had been and blessing the direction they were going in. I didn't know that. But in my purse, I had a book I had picked up, Story of the Hopi. And when I got home, I opened it up. And as I got to that, those tears flowed. because I had been given a gift. It wasn't a coincidence. It was a synchronicity that I look up to see that, to see him, and that I had the explanation and the reason right there with me. I hadn't yet read it, but I was given it. There is truth in every belief that we have, because we are not accidents. We are meant to be here. We are meant to connect with each other. We're meant to get over our tininess, our insanity, our self-centeredness. It's all made up. And we are meant to celebrate and utilize the oneness that we are, the wholeness. There's only one of us. We will discover unity only when we realize that this wholeness exists within our own diversity. Ours and each of our 7 billion neighbors. This will happen when we recognize that every human being, ordinary in every outward aspect, is truly being called on to become the mouthpiece for God. And so it is. Namaste.